What's the closest we can come up with, Gary Matsumoto, for a figure of the number of Americans that were that had Gulf War syndrome after the first Persian Gulf War?
We've got more than 250,000 troops who have reported some sort of illness stemming from their service in the Persian Gulf. Now, I don't think all of those complaints could be attributed to an experimental vaccine. It's just a very, very kind of mushy thing to do to try to come up with the numbers, because the military has not done what many people would consider to be a sound epidemiological study. So we don't know. I can tell you what we do know, and that is you talk about autoimmune disease, and it's probably a term that not a lot of people hear, even though it's fairly common. What most people will know are the diseases themselves, the most common ones being multiple sclerosis, lupus, and rheumatoid arthritis. Now, a lot of the troops coming home from the Persian Gulf were at first told they had some sort of problem with stress from combat. And then they were told that they had depression. And then some were told, well, it's just your imagination. And when they went eventually to civilian physicians for an examination, they were clinically diagnosed with one of these autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis and lupus. And what was particularly peculiar about this is that diseases like lupus normally afflict women at a rate of 10 to 1 over men, 9 to 1 or 10 to 1 over men. And most of the lupus sufferers coming back from the war were men. So something was really askew here. And then the military did later on admit that there was a statistically significant amount of ALS in Persian Gulf veterans.
Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's disease. And the military, I think we have to point out here, has never admitted that it is administered any experimental medicines or vaccines to troops. They vehemently deny this. But there is a little bit more than pure circumstantial evidence indicating that this did in fact happen, which is, as we've discussed earlier, a perfectly legal thing to do under the current regulations. In 1998, the FDA, the National Institutes of Health, and the Department of Defense organized a special working group to accelerate the development of the new vaccine that was first devised at Fort Detrick, interestingly, by Dr. Bruce Ivins, who was later accused of being the anthrax letter mailer. It was developed in 1989. By 1998, the military was ready to deploy this vaccine, and it contained squalene. Now, what happened was, when this program got underway, the vaccine was being administered to troops who were mainly deploying into the Persian Gulf area. We were running a northern watch and a northern no-fly zone and a southern no-fly zone over Iraq. So a lot of Air Force personnel were flying over there, if not flying as fighter pilots, as support troops for the squadrons deploying over there. And they got the vaccine. And many of them started to complain that they were getting very ill. And as it happened, a lot of them were developing the same autoimmune diseases that Gulf War veterans developed when they returned from Saudi Arabia. And we're talking about lupus, we're talking about multiple sclerosis, and we're talking about rheumatoid arthritis. Now, what I did in a report that I wrote for Vanity Fair was I tracked the complaints to specific lot numbers of anthrax vaccine produced by a company called Bioport in Michigan. And after the publication of this story, the FDA tested the lot numbers that I had specified in the article, and they found squalene in them. And there was a one-to-one correlation between the illness in troops and administration with lots of vaccine that the FDA proved contained squalene.